From WHQR Public Radio in Wilmington, North Carolina, this is Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. John David and Ben David are brothers. They also happen to be identical twins, and they're both district attorneys for adjacent jurisdictions in North Carolina. John David, elected in 2010, is DA for the 13th District, which includes Bladen, Brunswick, and Columbus counties. He is right-handed, and he is Republican. John David, welcome to Coastline.
Good afternoon, Rachel. It's great to be with you.
Ben David has served as DA for the 5th District, which covers New Hanover and Pender counties, for more than 12 years. He is left-handed, and he is a Democrat. Ben David, welcome to the program.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having us today.
But it's not their dominant neurology slash politics and whether there's a connection there that we're here to explore with them today. We're going to learn about what keeps them inspired, how close they are ideologically, but maybe not politically, and what that means, and whether both of them are in fact here today, or it's an early April Fool's joke, and one of them is answering to Ben and John. And we'd like you to be part of this conversation. If you have a question for either district attorney or both, you can reach us on this Wednesday at 910-343-1138 or coastline at whqr.org. Years ago, the two of you worked together in New Hanover County's Violent Crime Division. But that wasn't the beginning of public service for you, John David.
Right.
You actually entered public service earlier than Ben did. Can you tell us about that journey?
Well, I started my career in Florida, a little town called Miami, which is a small town in South Florida, a small crime problem. I was a prosecutor there for about 5 years, and it was just a wonderful place to learn the craft. And that's where I first got inspired to do this job, and I realized there that it provided a tremendous outlet to really live a purpose-driven life. And I actually convinced Ben to leave the public sector, or I'm sorry, the private sector, and become a prosecutor like me. And he, in turn, convinced me to move here.
What was the biggest obstacle, Ben David, to thinking about leaving the private sector and going into public service?
Making a third of my current salary was definitely a start. No, kidding aside, John was just way cooler than I was. I mean, I was listening to his war stories, and I was taking him out to dinner. And it was a lot easier to go to South Beach than stay in Winston-Salem, where I was at the largest law firm in this state. But, you know, I was struck by how you can really help people as an attorney. And that's why both of us went to law school to begin with. And there's just nothing like speaking for the dead in a murder case. There's nothing like giving victims a voice when any crime occurs. And there's nothing like really having to be the conscience for the community when there's so-called victimless crimes. And so to get to do that, and when I saw what John was doing in Miami, I said I had to do it too. And I just didn't want to take another bar exam, so I moved to a community I'd never been to, which is the beach here in New Hanover County, and quickly got my brother to join me.
When you were elected, John David, in 2010 as the district attorney for the 13th District, there was, you know, talk about conspiracy theories. Oh, my God, the David brothers, they're going to be in charge of 5 counties in southeastern North Carolina, the power that they'll have. But you guys actually talked about it back then as an opportunity. Can you, first of all, explain what that opportunity was? And has that borne itself out, or are things more complicated than you thought?
Well, yeah, I do remember the conspiracy theories back then. There were people that had said they're taking over southeastern North Carolina, Nexus State, and then world domination. And just, you know, for us, it was almost laughable. You know, we realized that we had an opportunity at that moment to really have a coordinated regional approach to fighting crime. We recognize that there's a lot of crime that goes back and forth across the Cape Fear Bridge every day. And so drawing upon my experiences in Miami, where I learned a lot of best practices, national best practices, and realizing our opportunity to implement here in a whole region and start coordinating our efforts, we really thought that was going to be a good thing. And I think that's now bearing fruit.
And what are some of those best practices that you're bringing to this region?
Well, one of the things that we've realized is, you know, coordinating the law enforcement effort, particularly around drug trafficking and violent crime. Given the mobilization of our society now with cell phones and cars, crime travels, and particularly the drug trade. And so we have a lot of people who are dealing heroin in Brunswick County who happen to be gang members and heroin dealers here in New Hanover County. So the fact that Ben and I coordinate on an almost daily basis about these issues, I think, is a tremendous benefit to our region.
How do you do that? Are you talking about just talking on the phone with each other and saying, I'm working on this case? What do you, Ben David?
We had dinner together last night. So it's not just the coordination with each other. John struck on something I think that's really important to note, and that is there are over 1,000 officers in 20 different police agencies just in my district. John has a similar group that he advises. We brought 5 sheriffs together just in a restaurant in the middle of nowhere in one of our rural counties and just broke bread with each other and said, listen, why don't we look at this more regionally than just looking at where it's occurring at the moment? The analogy we use is it's like squeezing water. If you stamp out crime in one area, it just shoots somewhere else. And so we wanted to do that for a 5-county region and not just in the pocket where there might be violence today or drug dealing today.
You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM. We're talking with 2 district attorneys today in southeastern North Carolina who happen to be brothers and who also happen to be twins whose districts are adjacent and who align with different political parties. John David is the DA for the 13th District, which includes Bladen, Brunswick, and Columbus counties, and Ben David is the DA for the 5th, which covers New Hanover and Pender counties. You can ask your own question on this Wednesday by calling 910-343-1138. You can also email us today at coastline@whqr.org. I want to get into some personal elements of your growing up, just because I think it's going to be hard to get back there as this discussion goes on. But the two of you were not raised with faith really as the centerpiece of your lives. And yet both of you are now elders in Presbyterian churches in the area. Can you talk about how you went from not having it be important in your childhood to it being a central focus of your life now, Ben David?
Sure. You know, first we'll start with, you know, what's already written in Micah, which is all of us should do justice and love mercy and walk humbly. And what better mission statement for a DA than that? As it relates to our faith journeys, I can tell you that I was really moved by seeing life and death on a daily basis as a DA. I saw people's faith get tested and sometimes really shaken, but also deepened through these tragedies that we were personally handling in the violent crime unit together. We have a homicide family support group, for instance, that meets monthly. And hearing from those moms and meeting those brothers and uncles and really living in those stories and never meeting the people that we were talking about in a courtroom, what I learned is that really the great leveler for all of us is we're all going to die one day. And the things that connect us to our loved ones and to our sense of purpose can be a deep faith, and it is for us. And it's hopefully made me a better person. It's not something I wear on my sleeve that much, but I can tell you that it's really made me appreciate life in a way that I didn't have before I came to faith.
A lot of those deep spiritual revelations could be expressed in any number of faiths, but you chose Christian theology, specifically the Presbyterian denomination. Why? John David?
Well, being Presbyterian is less important to me than being a Christian. And, you know, I will tell you that one of the reasons I go to church is to feel smaller and realize, particularly in a role like this, it's not about me. There is a higher power, and I have to be guided and directed by that. I will tell you, too, that in our lives, we've realized the incredible synergy which comes when you partner with the faith-based community and do outreach efforts. So many of the worthwhile programs that we've embraced, like these Backpack from Home program, like the Matthews Ministry in Brunswick County, and so many of the outreach efforts which have helped us in the criminal justice system address the root causes of crime are you know, we just have invaluable partners in the faith-based community. And, you know, that's very important to both of us. Our personal faith and the relationships we've established help us do our jobs better.
How does your faith express in your job?
Well, public service is about sacrifice. And I think there's a lot of messages in that in the Christian faith, too. And what John said, I think, is very important. You know, you simultaneously as a leader can't play small, but you also have to understand it's not about you. And I think that, you know, as we sit here right now, both of us run our largest law firms in this area, mine in New Hanover County and John in those 3 counties, and the same for Pender. And what we would say about that is there are 2 murder trials going on in the 5th District right now, and I'm not handling either one of those. And you probably don't know the names of those public servants who are doing them, but we're privileged to get to hire those folks and work alongside them and obviously deal with the law enforcement community that puts their life on the line every day. we see sacrifice all the time. We see people who are staying true to something that's not about themselves. And that's what I think can deepen anyone's faith journey.
The two of you are, I don't know if it's fair to say opposite ends of the political spectrum, but you're aligned with different political parties. We have about 2 minutes before we go to break, so I know this is going to continue into the next segment. But how do you, first of all, we know that you agree on a lot of points, and we know that a lot of your basic values are the same. But where do you diverge? On what policy issues do the knockdown dragouts come, John David?
Well, that's a great question. First of all, I'd reiterate something implicit in your question, which is, you know, we've tried to take politics out of the process and instead focus on the law and the facts as our guidepost for delivering justice in any case. You know, we've come to understand that criminals don't care what political affiliation you are. They don't care what party you belong to when they, you know, steal your things or hurt somebody. And so we've been very intentional, both within our offices and within our communities, in talking about what the true guidepost for justice should be. And politics has nothing to do with it. In fact, when properly understood, politics should be nowhere in the justice system. I would say from a personal level, it's fairly easy as a Republican to give credence to the things like a strong police prosecutor team approach to fighting crime. I am pro-death penalty in appropriate cases. And I do support gun rights even in the context of prosecuting people that violate crimes with guns.
And I'm going to ask you more about that when we come back as we're watching some legislation evolve in Raleigh. You're listening to Coastline. When we come back from this break, more from John David and Ben David, district attorneys for Bladen, Brunswick, Columbus, New Hanover, and Pender counties. And you can call with your questions for the twin DAs on this Wednesday at 910-343-1138. You can also email us today at coastline@whqr.org. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. You're listening to Coastline. You're listening to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Today, we're taking a rare opportunity to talk with Ben David and John David, twin brothers and district attorneys in adjacent jurisdictions in southeastern North Carolina. If you have your own question for one or both of the Davids, you can give us a call on this Wednesday at 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org. During the break, I noticed that Linda from Boiling Spring Lakes called. She didn't want to be on the air, but she had essentially asked a question about your political differences and how, despite those differences, how you can help to unite people when you're divided yourselves as twin brothers politically. That's a good question about civil discourse and kind of healing this polarization that we're seeing going on. But before we get there, John David, want to go back to what you said about aligning with some of the basic Republican values, like you talked about a strong police force and Second Amendment rights and how important those are. There is some legislation that's been moving through the General Assembly in this long session. And one of the recent bills that I think passed its first reading in the House was sponsored by Representative Chris Millis, who is from Pender County in your district, Ben. And it was about lowering the age required for the concealed carry of a weapon. Is that something, lowering it from, I think, 21 to 18? Where do you stand on kind of loosening some of these? I mean, the way I think Representative Millis put it was, when he was talking with Tim Buckland of the Star News, this is removing some encumbrances that people should not have for their basic right to bear arms.
You know, I haven't read that specific piece of legislation, but I will tell you that I think we need to be very guarded about, you know, giving our kids too much access to guns, because we've seen the tragic consequences of what happens when, you know, kids treat these like toys, and it leads to outcomes involving homicides. And Ben and I, in our roles as district attorney, actually respond to crime scenes. We've stood over the bodies of dead children. And so I think we have to have reasonable restrictions. And I think that the current law, as best I can tell, provides opportunities for people to responsibly use firearms and not be overly restrictive. So I don't know if we necessarily need to make any changes at all in this area.
Is 18 a child?
Well, that's interesting you would say that. You know, Ben and I this past week were actually up in the legislature dealing with Chris Millis. We had the opportunity to meet with our entire legislative delegation from the Cape Fear region. We were up there for 3 days with all the district attorneys from across the state. And certainly the biggest issue happening right now in Raleigh is the talk about raising the juvenile age. And as district attorneys, we wholeheartedly support raising the age responsibly to make sure that we're not over-criminalizing youthful indiscretions, because we realize that when you label a child at an early age as a criminal, it can have devastating effects on their ability to go to college or get jobs.
For people who haven't been following that particular issue, Ben David, explain what that means.
Sure. Right now, we're one of two states left in America. New York's the other, where you're 16, you're an adult. Most places, it's 18. What does that mean? It means that two kids who break into a car, one who's in South Carolina and one who's in North Carolina, one's getting their record expunged at, 18. The other's never going to college, not getting the job they want. The average felony is going to hit your future earning potential 40%. We have created a permanent underclass in this country with many of the nonviolent prosecutions that we could talk about that aren't being able to be removed from records. And so part of the effort here, and New Hanover County leads the state in the number of deferred prosecutions out of juvenile court. We have reduced the 47% is the now reduced number of cases even entering the court system through what our Chief Judge Jay Korpening instituted called Stopping the School to Prison Pipeline. We are working as much as we can on teachable moments and treatment for young people and not looking just at throwing away the key when they're in that age range. Now, having said that, we of course say we're going to try juveniles as adults if they commit murders and first-degree sex offenses, and we've done that and we'll continue to do it. We need adequate funding also for the juvenile justice system because it's expensive. But if we have those two things in place, all 44 DAs in this state are for raising the juvenile age.
Okay. So a majority of district attorneys support this. This kind of bill has been proposed in the House before, and it's passed the House and then failed when it's gotten to the Senate. What is the opposition to this about? And do you expect it? Do you expect a similar thing to happen this time around?
Well, we've had John, the opportunity to speak to Bill Rabin and Michael Lee and our senators from this region. And Danny Britt now, who's a newly elected senator out of the Lumberton area. And I think they understand the inertia and the importance of raising the juvenile age, but doing it responsibly. And, getting back to the fact that they're all three Republicans and we have a lot of Democrats in this area, too, I would say that, the tone in Washington and the degree of political discourse is something that's frankly embarrassing to both of us. We've decided that, it's not our talk but our behavior which our community is ultimately going to judge us by. So we're trying to move the needle by our actions more than any shallow statements about, politics right now.
Ben David.
And I think the question that came in about, how can we as DAs in opposite parties help with this political discourse, I think too much is sometimes made of compromise and consensus building. People don't like that. What they want is to get their way, right? They definitely do in a courtroom. It's an adversarial process. And so what we've done politically is form left-right coalitions. And what I mean by that, and that's much different than consensus building or compromise, it says we're here attacking the same issue for different reasons. Take mass incarceration, which is a bipartisan issue. We need to end mass incarceration. We have 5% of the world's population and 25% of the world's prisoners. Republicans might not like it because it's expensive. Democrats might not like it because of treatment and mercy and everything else we could talk about. We can all get around this issue and say, let's put things in place that do that. And so the year I was president of the Conference of DAs, working with as many Republican DAs as Democrats, we said, let's focus on justice reinvestment, where we're actually focusing on community-based alternatives, mental health treatment, drug treatment, the things that you can't warehouse away in the prisons. And we've reduced that prison population by 10% over the last 3 years, and the crime rate has not gone up. And so this is something we can all celebrate and agree that there are moments where we can come together, even if there's different things bringing us there.
another basic political difference, and I think it's important to talk about the policy differences because the way you deal with those might help show some people how to model civil discourse and what you're calling a left-right coalition, Ben David.
Yes.
So the death penalty, what happens when John David in his jurisdiction decides to pursue the death penalty in a case? And this is something – is it fair to say that you're against that?
No, that's not fair.
It's
in,
not.
In fact, I've put three men on death row. And I did that because that's my oath and that's the law and I uphold the law. I haven't had to convene a death penalty trial in the 12 years I've been district attorney. All three of those came up as the lead prosecutor when I was an assistant DA. What have I changed? We have put in a process in place that actually dealt with my predecessor too, where we have a convening of five assistant district attorneys, senior prosecutors, combined 100 years of experience that look at the facts, look at the law, look at whether there's mitigating and aggravating circumstances, which the law requires you to do. We now have prosecutorial discretion where we didn't back when we were assistants that say we will offer life without parole if you take it. And if you've looked down the line, that's exactly what people are doing in the Fifth District. Part of that's because a defendant hasn't heard the words not guilty in more than 18 years in this district after a murder trial. But also it's because we temper what we do with saying we'll let the community decide in some of the worst cases. And we have. And I've stood in front of juries and asked for the death penalty. And ultimately it's the community, not the judge, who picks that penalty. We're in an age now where we haven't had an execution in 8 years. So while it's on the books, it's not being enforced. And what we've said to these victims' families is if we can get life without parole in the vast majority of cases, we need to take that. There's still – I can envision scenarios where we're still going to seek the death penalty. But by and large, we now have the discretion we didn't before. And so that's one example where getting that law change that occurred about the same time I became DA was a very healthy thing because people thought, oh, they'll seek the death penalty more. And that's not what's happened around the state.
And I think it's important, too, for the community to understand how sparingly we use that sanction. You know, in all the murder cases that are currently pending in the 13th District, we only have two pending death penalty cases. And I believe that one of the best practices is not to make that decision in isolation, but to do something that Ben is doing, which is convene a death penalty review committee, which is comprised of a culturally diverse array of people, you know, men and women, black and white, Hispanic. To look at the facts and law of this case and say, is this one of the exceptional situations on the continuum of bad that would qualify for the ultimate sanction? And so it's something that, as district attorney, I've used very sparingly and only when I felt like it was absolutely appropriate given the circumstances.
You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM. We're talking with district attorneys and twin brothers John David and Ben David of the 13th and 5th districts, respectively. You can ask your own question of them on this Wednesday by calling us at 910-343-1138. You can also email us today at coastline@whqr.org. Don from Wilmington just dropped out, but he says, I want to thank both the district attorneys for their commitment to our community. I'm in a profession where I see a lot of overdoses and deaths from the opioid epidemic, and I know that's something that concerns both of you. We've done a number of Coastline episodes on different aspects of the opioid epidemic, from harm reduction to how they're dealing with it in the medical community to law enforcement's evolving approach to it. Why is this so important for this community, and by that I mean southeastern North Carolina, to get its arms around? Why, for people who haven't been directly touched by it or don't know that they have, what impact is it having on the community? Ben David.
I would start by reminding everybody that we're surrounded by water, and there's something called the ripple effect. And we all have known about the ripple effect. If something's dropped into the water, there's waves of consequences that lap onto distant shores. We see that at the courthouse. It shows up in our traffic load in fatalities because a lot of the impaired driving now is opioids. We see that in overdose deaths, and that's now leading the cause of death over even car accidents and guns. We're seeing that when people break into homes and cars to support a habit. And we're seeing this in all the crimes of violence, whether it's gang-related or drug dealing, their armed home invasions, their rips.
this crisis, this epidemic, is the very fuel for the engine of crime that we see. And it affects all of us in this region, and all of us need to be concerned about it.
John David.
Well, I would echo some of that. You know, there's something we call secondary deviance, which means that, you know, it's not – people say that drugs are victimless crime, but when we consider the fact that, you know, all the breaking and enterings are being driven by this activity, that a lot of the drug dealing has a lot of violence attached to it, and people take self-help and arm themselves and live in a parallel universe, there's a lot of bad which goes with the heroin trade. And we've started to recognize that we're going to have to fight this battle on many fronts, and some of them non-traditional. We are on the enforcement side of the law, and so we've decided that we can't just stay in our lane on this one. There has to be treatment. You know, certainly, we've embraced treatment courts in Brunswick County, which my office has contributed towards tremendously. And, you know, we have to partner with people outside of the criminal justice system. Ben and I have both served on the board of directors for Coastal Horizons for years. We have a lot of people that are working on this issue in different contexts and from different perspectives, because we realize to solve this effort, you know, there has to be prevention, there has to be treatment, and then there has to be enforcement. We have sort of shifted our view of away from just thinking about having a war on drugs to declaring a war on drug dealers. We are focused on the supply side in our communities and focusing on the dealers as an effort to end this problem.
Ben David.
We have to not forget, though, about the demand, because economics is driven by demand and supply. And it's four times as expensive to buy heroin here as New York City, and that's because we have a huge demand issue. And so we need to compliment the hospital when they said, we're going to stop handing out opioids at the emergency department because people are pill-seeking. Four out of five heroin addicts started with pills. And of those, three out of four were taking someone else's pills. And so when we talk about pill drops, which is this Saturday, April 1st at the Medical Mall, and why are the DAs talking about pill drops, we see the ripple effect. We understand that a lot of people tell themselves a rational lie. It's called rationalizing. Oh, if a doctor gave it to me, it's going to be okay. If we have 30 pills where five will do, what about the other 25? They're the ones showing up at the high school party. They're the ones that are turning into what we're seeing in the hotels. They're the things that are causing these impaired wrecks on the roads. So we all have to be focused on the supply, but also on the demand, and saying we have to do something to treat this, to break the cycles of addiction, and to understand that this is a medical issue just as much as it is a criminal justice one.
There are two pieces of legislation that seem to have bipartisan support making their way through the state legislature right now. One is called the STOP Act. And Ben David, that's, I think, part of what you were alluding to. This was discussed when Attorney General Josh Stein was here on Monday, and it's something that there seems to be broad support for. I've heard sort of, I don't know, scuttlebutt that people aren't willing to really say on the air that I'll say it.
We're saying it now, aren't we?
Yes, we are. That there may not be a complete embrace of further regulation of the way doctors dispense opioids to their patients. The STOP Act, is it in fact interfering with that doctor-patient relationship? And could this possibly create more expense or make it difficult for people who really do benefit from opioids and don't seem to benefit from other types of painkillers? I mean, is that interfering in this very private relationship?
There's going to be unintended consequences, I think, for any piece of legislation, and certainly it's going to make doctors have to ask more searching questions about, you know, the person's need for that number of pills and what they're actually doing with them. I'd say on balance, though, any legislation which limits the supply of harmful drugs in our community is probably a good thing, because in our experience, these pills frequently find their way to children and to people that didn't originally receive that prescription. So I think it's a good thing. And I will say that we've had tremendous partnerships and I think tremendous cooperation from the medical community on this issue. They recognize that a lot of the people that are now heroin addicts initially got addicted to pills in a medical context. And when we tightened up on the doctor feel goods and when the pill seekers lost their ability to get drugs, they unwittingly shifted to heroin, and the problem mushroomed on us. And so they are now part of the solution with us.
Going back to the demand for this, Anthony from Brunswick County didn't want to be on the air. This seems to be a pattern. What's the position of the district attorneys on the legalization or decriminalization of marijuana? He says about 14 states have legalized it. I don't know if that's true. He says, I think it would dampen the opioid epidemic. I've heard from local law enforcement officials quite the opposite. Ben David, do you have an opinion on that?
Yes, I appreciate the question. And I know that there are many people who say, well, it's not as harmful as other things. Here's the issue, though. I speak to 10,000 school kids a year, and I learn more from them than anything I could ever talk about. I was at a school yesterday. I'll be at another school tomorrow. John was talking to 600 himself in Brunswick County. And here's what they tell us. When I ask them, raise your hand if you think it's okay to text and drive, they raise their hand because they're so nimble with their phones. And they all have them, by the way, starting in the eighth grade at latest. And I say, well, where'd you learn that? My parents. And then when you ask people, you know, raise your hand if you think marijuana should be legal, a lot of people will raise their hand again. And where did they learn it? I wouldn't want to trade jobs with the prosecutors in Amsterdam or, for that matter, Colorado. I think that while there are responsible people who say, you know, we can use this for medical purposes, certainly, and I think we should, and while there are responsible people who could use it much more effectively than alcohol, which is the number one date rape drug, it's the number one fuel for violence, and way worse than marijuana in the criminal justice system, normalizing any substance that impairs you or that creates this friction within families is something that I'm just not going to endorse. I understand the argument. It's certainly not as physically addictive as the other substances. One final thing I'd say on this. In this area, drug dealers know that, and so they're spiking it with other stuff. They're spraying it with formaldehyde or dipping it in PCP. That's a big reason to stay away from the marijuana here, even if you think it's not as bad as the other stuff.
You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM. We're talking with John David and Ben David, district attorneys for a five-county area in southeastern North Carolina. You can call with your question on this Wednesday at 910-343-1138. You can also email us today at coastline@whqr.org. And when we come back from the break, we'll hear a question from a listener about immigration reform. You're listening to Coastline. You're listening to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. We're enjoying a rare visit with two district attorneys from southeastern North Carolina today. John David's jurisdiction covers Bladen, Brunswick, and Columbus counties. Ben David is the DA in District 5, which is New Hanover and Pender counties. And yes, they are brothers, and yes, they are twins. And we're taking your questions on this Wednesday at 910-343-1138. You can also email us today at coastline@whqr.org. And one listener writes, you mentioned your faith and beliefs are very important to both of you. How do you decide which prevails in an instance where the law differs from what your faith or personal beliefs dictate? A current broad topic I can think of is immigration. Let's toss that to you, John David.
Well, you know, first of all, our oath requires us to recognize what our forefathers did, which is there's a separation in this country between church and state. And so we will always give credence to following what the law is as written in the books and apply that to the facts in any case. And meaningfully, one of the things we do is we try to look away from individual relationships and ask questions like who your daddy is or where are you from and focus solely on the merits. You never put faith aside, but you honor your oath and focus on the law. First and foremost. With respect to immigration, I think it's important that we recognize that we should focus on the facts of the case and less about someone's status. I'm troubled by some of the national discourse that really says effectively throw them all out of the country right now, because that misses the point that if everything's a priority, then nothing's a priority. We can't possibly get rid of everyone at the same time. Instead, we need to be very intentional about focusing on the illegal immigrants who are actually committing crimes in our community. We've already forged strong relationships with ICE and people at the federal level who are dealing with immigration issues and targeting the people that are violating the law and getting rid of them first.
Ben David.
And if just to piggyback off of that, you know, when we say that if everything's a priority, then nothing is, jail space, prison beds, that's a scarce resource. And who do you want to put there? When we were assistant district attorneys in the violent crime unit here in this district, there were only 320 beds. And people were sleeping on the outside of jails chained to them because we had almost 400. The day we built a 550-bed jail, we filled it that night. And people ask me, do we need more jail space? We could put 1,000 beds in New Hanover or Pender County and fill them. Here's the issue. Who do you want in there? Do you want a yard guy who got a DWI for 2 months waiting on an immigration enforcement officer to come and say deportation is here? Or do you want a child molester there? Do you want a drug dealer or a drug user? We know the answers to these questions. And so, again, these are nonpartisan issues. And what I certainly don't want is for things in Washington to play out at the local level where we're really doing harm to personal safety and, frankly, just flat out doing the right thing. And so I totally endorse what John said. It's very important to set aside our beliefs from the law, and the law has to win. That's the First Amendment. This right here gets down to public safety and upholding our oath, first and foremost, to make sure that the laws are fairly applied to everyone. And so I take a pretty dim view of the national discourse, and I don't want to be party to locking folks up waiting for something that's never going to come.
You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM, talking with Ben David and John David, twin brothers and district attorneys in adjacent districts in southeastern North Carolina. You can ask your question on this Wednesday by giving us a call at 910-343-1138. You can also email us today at coastline@whqr.org. Sam from Wilmington, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Hi there.
Good afternoon now.
Hello. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I am 68. I've had bilateral shoulder replacements, bilateral hip replacements, and next week I'm going in for a knee replacement. My comment is every time I've gone into rehab because I haven't been able to go home, and when I check out of rehab, I have to take all medications that I haven't used but were prescribed with me. That has been anywhere from 30 to, I'll say, 60 pills of hydrocortisone. And I don't understand it. The last time I checked out of rehab, I hadn't had any pain to require hydrocortisone in 3 days. And yet I was sent home with a ton of pills just because they had been prescribed and had to sign for them and think.
I'm confused. Hydrocortisone? Are you talking about
hydrocodone?
Okay, yeah.
Hydrocodone. I'm sorry. Yes, it's a opioid for sure.
Schedule 1.
And at one of my replacements, I actually had a rectal bleed and had to go back into the hospital and then back into rehab 3 days later. And
Sam, what's your question for the two district attorneys?
It wasn't a question. It was, well, how do you get the doctors to keep from prescribing these kind of medications?
So you're saying that these opioids have been overprescribed in your case?
And completely. And
so,
I can't believe that it's an isolated anomaly.
Right.
When I had to go back in again, I had twice as much checking out of the rehab as I did the three other times because I had gone through rehab twice. And I had all these medications. Last time, I was off the medications for 3 days, and they still sent me home with all these medications, and I can't believe that they were just dumped down.
That's a good question. Okay, let's let Ben David respond. Thank you so much for your call, Sam.
Sure. Well, this is a story we hear frequently, and that is, you know, there's too many pills on the street, and they start in the hands of the right people and then end up in the hands of the wrong ones. And that's why I want to encourage, again, people to not only visit the pill drop at the Medical Mall in Wilmington right across from the hospital on April 1st this Saturday, but also we have permanent sites at some of our law enforcement facilities and at other places in this community. And don't flush them because that hurts our water. But I would also say that the hospital understands its role, that this is an epidemic that was born in some respects by the lawful prescriptions getting into the wrong hands. And so I endorse what they said in their mission statement. They redrafted it at New Hanover Regional, where they said, you know, only 8% of the community comes to this hospital every year, but 100% of the people need to be worried about their health and their well-being. And we need to go out into the community and recognize the ripple effects that are being created. That's what we think about in the justice system. And what she's striking on is what we see all the time, unintended consequences and the ripple effect.
And I want to move on to a question from Justin. He says, given the emotionally heavy and consequential cases and issues encountered in your professional lives, what are strategies that you employ to calm your minds and maintain perspective? More specifically, what are strategies that have allowed you both to be professionally engaged and effective and fulfilled in your personal lives? John David.
Wow, that's a wonderful question. You know, first of all, prayer and meditation are something that I practice on a regular basis. But, you know, I guess I'd want to emphasize, too, people, you know, they see the news, they read the papers, and they think, wow, you know, one of the twins is going to be dealing with this tragedy. The truth is that both of us are blessed to have a team of 35 to 40 dedicated professionals around us. And people might not realize, Rachel, that in my jurisdiction, it's the geographic size of the state of Delaware. You know, when you put those three counties together, it's literally that large. It can be, you know, snowing in Tar Heel while it's sunny on Bald Head Island in the same day. And so I do personally respond to crime scenes. I've stood over more dead bodies than I can count. I go to the police shootings and the homicides. And so I think, you know, you have to learn how to develop a professional distance from it, to be sure that we deal with people in their darkest hours and deal with real human tragedies. But, you know, that opportunity to speak for the dead and make sense of these cases and do it with a team of committed professionals who is really what makes our job so much easier is really gratifying for me. It is an opportunity for me to live a purpose-driven life.
Is there ever a time that one or both of you have just become obsessed with a case and you take it home with you and you dream about it and it haunts you, Ben?
Yeah,
David?
Yes. The short answer is yes. You know, particularly the ones involving children. I became the district attorney 2 days before I became a DAD for the first time. And you see the world differently when you're a dad. And, you know, seeing some of the horrific things that happen to our kids has motivated us to, I think, act differently because we want people's kids to be as happy and safe as ours are. And so that's also how we try and distance ourselves from what we see, because make no mistake about it, we have great lives. We're surrounded by people who are smarter and better than us that do a lot of this heavy lifting, but we also have a wonderful relationship not only with each other but with some great friends who keep us balanced, family who, you know, reminds us that of our roots, but also to remain humble. And we try to do things like travel and get exercise and things that help with the stress that anybody could encounter. And that speaks to all the officers and other prosecutors and victim witness assistants in our offices.
And we are starting to run out of time, but I want to get to Dawson, who has called in. But first, the recent passage of a bill in Raleigh, Governor Roy Cooper's first veto, was unsurprisingly overridden. And this makes local judicial elections, superior and district court judgeships, now officially partisan. The argument for the law is that many people were confused about, you know, you guys inhabit your own world in a sense, and you're very tuned into who's who and who's doing what and how they're ruling. But most civilians are not privy to that. And putting an R or a D on a candidate, the argument goes, can give voters a lot more information about what they're doing when they're in the voting booth.
We were actually in the well of the House when that came to vote. I was
the two of you together.
We both were. I was horrified that it passed, and I hoped that the Senate wouldn't, and they did too.
And why do you think it's a bad idea?
Politics need to stay out of the courthouse. There's enough politics going on. Again, what John said earlier is right. Child molesters don't ask kids what party they belong to before they molest them. The vast majority of things that we do to uphold our constitutional oath have nothing to do with what party you're in. I would advocate removing labels from not only DAs, but also from sheriffs. This is a step backwards. And I think our attorney general for 16 years, who's now our governor, recognized that because he was a lawman for, you know, four terms. This is a mistake, and we should call it out as one.
John David, do you agree?
I do to a certain extent, but I think there's a counter argument to this. You know, they say that hard cases make bad law, and you know, a brilliant man and a good leader in the legal community named Bob Edmonds lost the race for Supreme Court justice, and a lot of that was based on confusion about who he was. All the Republicans won at the statewide level at the Court of Appeals because they were designated, and Bob Edmonds, who was a Republican, was not designated. And so Republicans recognized that of the 800,000 people that voted in the presidential for president, 500,000 voted for the Supreme Court, and all 800,000 voted for the Court of Appeals. So you had a 300,000-person drop-off because of that confusion, and it led to a bad outcome. And so I think, you know, this was a reactionary bill to some extent to put labels back on to protect certain people. I will say on balance, though, our North Star has never changed, that taking politics out of the process and focusing on the qualities of the individual and what and their merit and ability is where this community should be.
You're listening to Coastline. We have Dawson of Wilmington. Welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Hey, thank you.
Sure.
So my question concerns the Wilmington Police Department, specifically the Real-Time Intelligence Center, which was brought online sometime late last year. I wanted to ask, and I guess this is in Ben David's jurisdiction, if they had any opinion about the capabilities that this intelligence center has. For instance, Chief Evangelos said that in addition to a large number of cameras, which are all around the city of Wilmington, the center also has the ability to look at people's social media, you know, to access any number of federal, state, and local databases. And I just wanted to know if they had any opinion about the oversight that the DA's offices might exercise.
Ben David.
Police in this regard.
Yes, Dawson, thank you so much for that question. First of all, I'll say that I'm familiar with that center. It's called the Sting Center, and I've had every one of my employees walk through it and get a tour because I wanted them to see the capabilities that are there. I think Dawson is probably recognizing a real tension that we have when we talked about opioids earlier and doctor-patient privilege and whether we invade that to get to the truth of a matter. We're talking about the same thing now with how big brother do you want government to get? I think it's very important to balance individuals' rights to privacy with our need to have information to protect the entire community. And that's an age-old tension that has existed since the founding of our country. And I think that while there's some very good developments here, we need to tread carefully. There's no question that we're many of the whodunits that we used to have are now what-do-you-call-its because we know exactly who was involved because it's now all on film or it's all on social media.
That's the upside. Is it possible this is an invasion of people's privacy? Ben David?
Yes, that is possible, and that's why we need to check it. We want to make sure that folks have an expectation of privacy, and when they do, a Fourth Amendment should be upheld, which says that you shouldn't be subjected to unreasonable searches and seizures. A lot of what that Sting Center shows, though, is things that are out in the public square. They're cameras that are placed downtown. They're red light pole cameras. They are things that have, frankly, helped us catch killers. So if you see it through the lens that I do, I can tell you we're the ones who get to make the calls on when this is even presented in court. There's many times we haven't used it, not because we couldn't, but because we shouldn't.
And briefly, according to the Associated Press, an expert on ethics and the law says North Carolina is the first state to require not only prosecutors but also attorneys in private practice to reveal any evidence of innocence they receive after a conviction. John David.
I just recently dealt with a case in Bladen County where a man was exonerated after having spent 32 years for a wrongful conviction on a murder. And I will say that prosecutors should be first in line to stand up and do the right thing and say that we're all about doing justice in a circumstance like that.
That's this edition of Coastline. John David, Ben David, what a pleasure having you both today.
Thank you, Rachel. Thank you so much.
See, they're both here. Coastline's executive producer is Cleve Callison. Producer is Isabel Shepherd. Technical director is Ken Campbell. If you missed part of this episode, look for it at whqr.org or get the podcast on iTunes. Tune in for the rebroadcast of this episode Sunday afternoon at 3. Join us for Coastline Live Wednesdays and Thursdays at noon here on HQR News 91.3 FM. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.